Today's podcast is sponsored by AMAC, the only conservative alternative to that other group. Join today at amac.us/Carter. Today, I'm going to be joined by columnist, author, and researcher, an expert in our national security and defense, James Carafano. We will be diving into how the cartel uses Chinese banks to fund their trafficking, drug smuggling, and crime at the southern border. And we'll also be following the money and getting into the dangers of the left's open border policies. You don't want to go anywhere. You do not want to miss this show. And by the way, just a prayer for all of those. This is the weekend before, the weekend of September 11th. I guess we've got to be thinking about all of those that lost their lives on that fateful day in 2001. It was just, it was horrific. And, you know, I've never forgotten it. I know many of the young people, some of you who listen to me, you were babies or young children during that time. But believe me, for all of us and that lived through it, for all of us that actually our lives changed because of that. I'll explain some of that in this upcoming monologue. I know my life completely changed after September 11th. And I think all of our lives did. Our nation surely did. And we want to talk about that and remember all of those that sacrificed so much in the fight against terror. Hey, everyone, please follow and subscribe. Get all the links to the show at sarahacarter.com. That is sarahacarter.com. And while you are there, please sign up for the email list so that you don't get shadow banned. We do not want to lose communication, especially in this day and age and with everything that's going on in our nation. We just can't afford it. You and I, everyone, we've got to stay together. We've got to be able to communicate. We've got In the time where communication is so important, we have to make sure that we are able to communicate with one another and that we are not ostracized or censored or kept away from what we need to do, right? That is save our nation. That's our one major goal. Folks, I am so grateful for Mike Lindell. I'm so grateful for MyPillow being a sponsor of this podcast. He is a true American, a great American. And guess what? Right now, he has the sale of the year on MyPillow PerCal bed sheets. Yes, queen size, regular price, $89.98. Now you're going to get it for $39.98. And I have them all over my house, from my guest bedroom to my kids' rooms. In my room, I tell you, these sheets are the best sheets ever. I send them as gifts to my college-aged children. My husband and I use them as gifts. And by the way, if you go to MyPillow or the My Store for MyPillow, you are going to find all of these items and so much more there. I'm telling you, you're going to get the My Slippers. You're going to get the MyPillow dog beds, the MyPillows. Everything that Mike Lindell has right there, even at My Store, guess what? It's American made. So I want you to go to mypillow.com/Carter. That is mypillow.com/Carter, or call 1-800-685-7221. That's 1-800-685-7221 for deep discounts on the MyPillow PerCal bed sheets, queen size regular, $89.98. Now you're going to get them for $39.98 while you're there. Take advantage of the buy one, get one free sale. You got to do that right now on all my pillows, towels, and more. Visit mypillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221 today for the sale of the year on my pillow PerCal bed sheets. mypillow.com/Carter or call 1-800-685-7221. So this is an important time, I think, for so many of us, because September 11th lands on a Sunday, and, you know, many of us, you know, will be in church, we'll be saying our prayers, you know, we'll be remembering, hopefully, all of us, those that have given their lives to fight to protect our nation. So that way we're not battling the terrorists here at home, right? That is the big reason why so many of our men and women went overseas to fight in September 11th. But we're failing at remembering and heeding the warnings of what happened on September 11th, 2001, when, you know, aircraft filled with U.S. passengers and foreign passengers were taken by terrorists with Al-Qaeda here in the United States. And when those aircraft were used as weapons against us, we allowed, it was like they were living here. You know, these terrorists were living in the United States. They came into our country for the most part, most of them legally. They skirted around our security systems. There were numerous failures. There was a 9/11 commission, a 9/11 commission that reiterated all of the mistakes that were made during the attack on the United States, which at that time was the largest attack in our country. In fact, I'm going through this old 9/11 commission report. You can get it online. You can buy the book. I have the book. I'm on the 9/11 commission report, warning us about how to guard ourselves against future attacks. That's what the 9/11 commission report was all about. How do we guard ourselves from future attacks to our nation? Do you think we're doing a good job of it? Do you think the Biden administration is doing what they're supposed to do to protect our nation? This is what I'm going to talk to Jim Carafano about. I want to understand why. Why after September 11th, after 20 years, over 20 years of war, America's longest war in Afghanistan, the graveyard of empires, all the lives lost, over 7,000 U.S. troops there, all the tens of thousands wounded, like my husband who lost his eyesight. After all of the sacrifices that our nation has made, hundreds of billions of dollars, I would say trillions in the end, all of those sacrifices for what? To just leave the southern border wide open? To pretend that that is not a security threat? Knowing full well, I mean, I don't know, I don't get tired of it. I don't get tired of hearing about, you know, these failures, because no one's fixed them. You know, this isn't a TV series. It's not going to end well for us. This isn't just pretend. Every time I go to Central America, every time I read some of my friend Michael Yon's messages to me and others, that he's in Panama, and, you know, he covers border issues as well, and he's been covering the Darien Gap, an incredible work that he's doing there. But every time I read those messages about people coming from Afghanistan, I just ran into a group of, you know, 20 coming through the Darien Gap. They're from, you know, parts of Africa where we know there's connections to terrorism, or, you know, people coming through from China or Russia or wherever, just trying to make their way to the United States. You know what goes through my head? What goes through my head is that, holy shit, over 800,000 known gotaways have already come into our country. I think it's more than like a million now since Biden has taken office. That means people that we haven't even had a chance to check yet. They've just come in. We're not ever going to check them. They've just blended into the fabric of our society. They have gone around whatever security systems we have, and they have made their way into the country. They were not apprehended. You're telling me that some of those folks aren't terrorists? They are. Sure they are. Al-Qaeda has been eyeing the border for a very long time. I've written stories about that going back 15 plus years. Al-Qaeda was already looking at that border as a possible entry point into the United States. If you can make it through and you can make it all the way, and by the way, we have encountered over 80 terrorists, known terrorists connected to terrorism, at our border. Do you remember when I would write about this? For those of you who know me and know my work, and the DIA was warning about it, CIA was warning about it, DEA was warning about it, everybody was warning about it. And I would write these stories, and the executive branch, whichever it was, it didn't matter if it was Bush, it didn't matter if it was Obama, it didn't matter who, They would be like, oh, that's alarmist. That's not going to happen. That's not true. Why would terrorists use the border? Are we dumb? Of course they would. Why not? Why not? It's great. It's an entry. It's an open sieve right now. Who's going to be responsible? I've said this before. When the next attack happens, this is something that I'm going to talk to Carafano about. I mean, who's going to be? No one? Are we just going to be like, oh, okay. What if it's your family? What if it's your child? I want you to go back and think about, you know, those flights. And in fact, I'm going to, you know, it's been so long. I'm going to look it up right now while I'm on here with you. I don't want to see the 9/11 Commission report. I want to remember the people. I remember Barbara Olson was on the flight that went into the Pentagon. And she was actually very good friends with a friend of mine. And I remember, you know, my friend saying to me, you know, how much they miss Barbara and how saddened they were. And I mean, just imagine what the terror and the horror. And I've talked to people who were standing right there as the plane went into the Pentagon. And then what about the planes that went into the World Trade Center? Do you even remember that? Think about the children that were on board those flights. I'm sure there were. I remember this. Airplanes, you know, September 11th, you know, it's like, we're going through the internet right now, you know, through history, you know, the World Trade Center, you know, it's like all people forget. We forget. We forget because it's time. It goes by. And thankfully we do. I mean, thankfully we move on, but we should learn something from it. We should learn something from it. American Airlines Flight 11. The hijackers then took control of the aircraft at large and bound for the West Coast with full loads of fuel. At 8:46 a.m., the first plane, American Airlines Flight 11, which had originated from Boston, was piloted into the North Tower of the World Trade Center. Think about that. Think about being on a plane and not even realizing 19 terrorists associated with Al-Qaeda had already taken those planes. They were already practiced. They were already ready to go. They were going to get, you know, they were going to commit this act of atrocity against the United States. These horrors. Imagine what went through the minds of the people on board those flights. Almost 3,000 people killed. Right? Remember the plane in Shanksville, Pennsylvania that crashed when those Americans said, after they found out these were terrorist attacks, there is no way we're going to allow this plane to fly into one of our buildings or to turn into and go into like the Capitol or the White House. The third plane that hit the world, after the World Trade Center, the third plane that hit the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia. And the two planes that were flown into the Twin Towers. That led to literally 20 years of war. My life changed. My life changed because I grew up in Saudi Arabia and I was familiar, you know, with the region and with, you know, I had friends who are Muslim, but I was familiar with extremism. Most Americans were not. I mean, this was a wake-up call. It was like a big wake-up call, like shook us to the core. We became friends with one another. We put out our flags. We loved our nation so much. We couldn't believe that this had happened. How could this happen to us? How could we end up in this situation? People joined the military. People joined the CIA. People became journalists. We traveled overseas to war zones like I did. My husband went to fight. We joined together to protect our nation. And now, look at where our nation is. What are we doing? Are we just, do you ever wonder that? Do you ever look at what's going on and say, how did we end up here? How did we go from doing everything to protect our nation to all of a sudden wanting to lead from behind, being angry, being apologetic, being angry at us. We allowed the enemy to turn us against each other. How does that happen so easily? We didn't fly planes into someone else's buildings. They flew into our buildings. They targeted Americans and America and everybody else who is a part of it. They have targeted the West, these extremists. We saw what happened in Spain with the Madrid bombings. We saw what happened in France with Bataclan. We saw what happened in England. We've seen this story before. And yet the Biden administration thinks it's okay to leave the border wide open. Sometimes I just feel people are on the take. Like there's no other way to explain it. How do you not protect your nation? How do we not protect each other? You guys, we have midterms. We have to pay attention. We have to get up off the couches. We have to go and vote. We have to fight for our nation. We have to speak up and speak out. And we cannot allow these leftist radicals who have somehow brainwashed a good portion of our country into believing that they are the problem, into fundamentally changing our nation. We have to get out there and speak up. We cannot be afraid. Too many people have sacrificed way too much for us to do that. Before I get to James Carafano, and I probably have talked about this before, but there was a moment, and I've told my husband this, you know, when I was in Afghanistan and I was flying with the PJs, the Parajumpers. And we were covering a story, my friend Mary Calvert and I, and she's a phenomenal photographer. And we were up in the air and we were kind of just going over Kandahar. It was pretty amazing. I was sitting on the edge of the helo. We were looking out. So far, so good. Everything was kind of calm. And then they get a call that one of the units is under attack, that there was an IED that went off and that the Taliban had surrounded one of our units and was shooting at it. And that the Parajumpers, the PJs, had to get in there. They had to do an emergency rescue. So they were paramedics, but that were specially trained, like special ops, you know, kind of, they were going to fight the guys while they go in to rescue the soldiers that had been wounded. And I was thinking to myself as we were, you know, it was just, it felt like slow motion, right? I wasn't no longer on the edge of the helo. I was in my seat. We were heading towards, the guys were ready. They had their guns on the ready. We were flying in, the guns were going off. You know, you could hear the gunfire from below at the helos, and they were coming in for the rescue, and the gunfire lessened. It lessened. I think they were scared. The Taliban moved away, but you could hear the people kind of like the ones that were anti-American, kind of like cheering. And I looked down and there was a Humvee and it had been just blown to bits. And I remember it being a Humvee, it would have been blown to bits. And I was thinking, gosh, you know, if they had only been in an MRAP, maybe they would have been okay. But a young man was brought on to my helo. Both helos had people being brought in. One was injured, and the other young man who was in his, probably he wasn't even 20 yet, is what I remember, but was in a body bag, like about the size of half of my body, maybe. And I thought to myself, this young man's life ended here in this foreign country, on this foreign land, in an all-volunteer, he volunteered to fight for his nation. It all started September 11th. And years later, his life would end there, and I would be flying back with him even before his parents knew that he had died. That's tough. That's very difficult. I want us all to think, not just, it's not a day, but to think about the sacrifices our nation has made and the people that have volunteered for our for our military, for our law enforcement, to protect this country. And then think about what the Biden administration is doing on that border. And then think about what could happen to your own family if we don't protect them, if we ignore this, if we're too lazy to speak or too scared to speak out. We really have to do it. It is an obligation of ours. And I hope that as this weekend comes, that you all remember those sacrifices on Sunday and say a little prayer for all those still suffering and pray that we never have to experience that again. But unfortunately, you know, history and reality are two things we can't ignore. And hopefully we catch it or catch them before they target us again. I'm very, very excited to have James Carafano on. He's a leading policy expert in national security and foreign policy challenges in the United States. He is the vice president of Heritage's Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy and the E.W. Richardson Fellow. James, thank you so much for being on the Sarah Carter Show.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me. And thanks for digging into this issue because looking at the ties between the transnational cartels and the Chinese criminal cartels, you would think that this would be such an obvious thing that everybody would be all over. And yet no one is really looking into this. And when you think about what are the two biggest foreign policy issues in America today,
right,
China and the border, and people aren't looking at this intuitive connection. It is kind of a head scratcher, isn't it?
Yeah, it's mind-blowing to me. It's mind-blowing. I feel as though, you know, especially right now, it's becoming more obvious. I mean, there's a little bit of information there as far as like with the Chinese banks, you know, and this money laundering scheme that's been going on. That to me is new news. The issues of China basically infiltrating our intellectual property rights or stealing them. And, you know, now we're finding out that, you know, Huawei Communications has been placing their systems in our cellular towers, which is crazy enough. But talk to me a little bit about how the Chinese banks or what you know about it facilitate the drugs, crime, and trafficking that we see on the southern border.
Yeah. So for folks who maybe aren't experts like that, like I know Sarah, as you guys may not know, but like Sarah's been on the border. And as a matter of fact, the fact she's alive today is kind of amazing. And she ever survived those days as a young cub reporter going to Mexico and doing stories on the cartel. I've always wondered, like, why is this woman still not, you know, head down on a pike? But
Right. Everybody wonders that. I do, too, sometimes.
Yeah, so. Look, the border is essentially run by the Mexican cartels, not the U.S. government, because, and this is not a partisan comment, it's not about politics, but essentially this administration has what's called an open border policy, which is literally anybody that shows up at the border, virtually all of them are going to be automatically allowed into the country, and there is no plan to ever have them leave again, right? It's this fiction that we're going to actually, you know, fairly process as people, but the reality is we're just letting them in, and then they're going all over the country without paying attention, and the numbers are staggering. When Biden's first term comes to a conclusion, the illegal population in the United States will be more than double that it was when he came into office. And if that were a state, it would be the equivalent of about the fourth largest state in the country. So we're talking over 20 million illegal aliens, 10 or more million that will show up on Joe Biden's watch. Now, how this links to the cartels is because the United States really isn't controlling our side of the border. The cartels are running a human trafficking network on the other side of the border, and our open border policies are literally advertising for them. It's the, hey, this is your guarantee to get in America. You pay your money, you know, we give you a wristband, we let you walk across or drive you across or whatever, and you have the golden ticket. And before where they have to say, well, you give us, you know, $10,000 and we'll try to get you across, and if they throw you back, we'll try again. But now it's like this is money in the bank. And so I don't think there's a really good estimate of the amount of money that the cartels are making from the human trafficking, but it's in tens of billions of dollars. And this money is going directly into a criminal organization. And like every business, you take your profits and you plow them back into the business. So today I might actually argue, because human trafficking really has such low operating costs, right? The product is coming to you and paying you to let it walk across the border. This may actually be the most profitable part of the cartel business. But that gives them all kind to basically do the other things, because the border is open, which means the drug smuggling is so much easier. And the reason why we're having record seizures is because unprecedented numbers of stuff is just pouring into the country. And the cartels don't care how much you catch, because for every dollar's worth of drugs that you catch, mm-hmm. they're getting many, many, many times that across the border. So
I say that all the time. I say that to people all the time. This is like, you can't just guesstimate. Even I hear people say things to me like, and I'm going to let you answer this, like, well, why would the cartels want to kill their client? I mean, that's like, that's the demand, you know, they don't care.
They don't care. There's 330 million potential clients. A lot of these are what's called fentanyl, which is synthetic opioids, right? You know, mm-hmm. And so where are they getting the opioids? Well, they're making them. We know that for a fact. And they're making them with chemicals that they're getting from China. We know that for a fact. A lot of these chemicals, they're actually not even paying for. I mean, there's a huge illegal fishing industry in Latin America, which is controlled by the cartels. And they and this fish is highly prized in China. The Chinese cartels can make big money off of selling it. And so they can just trade for fish, which they don't even pay for. So they're basically getting the precursors for free. But here's the point about the money laundering and all the rest, which is the Chinese society operates under something called civil military fusion, which means that the Chinese Communist Party believes that everything in the country is at the beck and call of the Chinese Communist Party. So the notion that there are significant banking activities or criminal activities that are based in China that are happening without the knowledge, consent, and even support of the Chinese government is really unthinkable, right? It's not like the United States where, you know, yeah, we have organized crime here, but the U.S. government is combating that. It doesn't consider that part of its infrastructure and income. In the Chinese government, they do. And so the point is, to your point about how do we know there's money laundering?
Right.
When we're looking at the numbers that we're looking at, it is impossible to move that kind of cash through a legal system. And at the end of the day, you want to be able to turn that usable cash that you can use in the West, not just in China. So of course, anybody who thinks that, you know, Chinese entities are not involved in money laundering and that this isn't being done without the consent of the Chinese government, this is just nonsense. And the question of you is how is this possible mm-hmm. that our biggest strategic threat and our gravest homeland security problem, that nobody is connecting those dots? And what I would argue for you is this is an inconvenient truth for the United States government.
Right.
To acknowledge that they have created a massive criminal enterprise on our border and fueled it, and it is undermining our homeland security and our safety, they can't acknowledge that. And then to acknowledge that's actually feeding and complementing our greatest strategic enemy, that their policy is what's driving this unprecedented threat to the United States, they can't ever acknowledge that that's for real. So they're not going to be wanting to talk about this.
But they've just let it go, James. The whole entire border, the policy of this Biden administration is to have really no policy other than complete chaos at the border. And I have to believe, based on what we're seeing, based on the facts, that our own government is working against our own national security by allowing our adversaries like China and using these cartels as proxies, by allowing them to infiltrate our border this way with poison to kill our people, and allowing these cartels to amass to these organizations and not ever hold China accountable. And they're our neighbor. They're our neighbors. That's what we're facing.
If you go back to organized crime in the United States as an analogy, right? There was a reluctance to tackle organized crime because it was originally fueled by prohibition.
Right.
And this was a policy that we wanted, right? We wanted to ban alcohol. So acknowledging that banning of alcohol was fueling a massive criminal enterprise was not something we really wanted to talk about. And then, you know, you think of places like Chicago, where we wind up battling people like Al Capone, and where we had to take this threat seriously. But then if you look further down the road, the U.S. government, the FBI was not keen on really acknowledging that the mafia even existed. Because to acknowledge that it existed would mean that they would have to go and fight it, right? And it was a real thing. And so it took actually decades where we just sat by and until we realized that this was a criminal enterprise that was actually threatening the public safety of American cities and communities across the country. What we're seeing here is far worse than that. I mean, this government knows that it's complicit in building up threats which are coming after the very fabric of our public safety and our prosperity and our security and our sovereignty. And it's not just them, because one of the byproducts of them is we are wide open for another 9/11. It's not just the anniversary. The reason why I talk about that is you have to remember that Al-Qaeda was humiliated. We drove them out of Afghanistan. We killed their leaders. We just killed another leader. In their part of the world, honor is power. And so they have to show that they are powerful. And the only way Al-Qaeda is ever going to get back its street cred and respect is if they come back and they do another 9/11 in the United States. And ultimately, they would love to plan that and run that from Afghanistan and to show, look, we have humiliated the United States yet again. That is just too tempting a target. And what we've done on the border is create a situation where we've given them a perfectly open attack vector that makes it virtually guaranteed they can get a team inside the United States and kill people. You know, meanwhile, Department of Homeland Security is focusing on facilitating human trafficking, working on, you know, gender diversity programs, talking about how we're going to transition DHS so it supports green energy. So we're actually taking our public safety, defunding police, and we're sidelining them and distracting them and underfunding them, even as we are exacerbating the threats. And you know, I know if somebody would say this to me, I would say, well, this is completely irrational. You're telling me the United States government is consciously and knowingly facilitating grave threats against the United States. And I would say, yes. And people would say, well, how is that possible? I mean, that's irrational. I said, but not from their perspective, because they have a political agenda to fulfill.
Right.
And whether it's the border or climate or education or anything else, from their perspective, it's only successful if what they're doing fits their politics. And if their politics are for open borders, it doesn't matter that of all the secondary and other effects, which are completely damaging and destruction, because in their liberal minds, it's like, well, there are policies, so they have to be good for America. I mean, look, even see this, we are losing Latin America left and right. We see the most atrocious regimes coming to power, and it's not by accident. It's because the Cubans and the Venezuelans and the Russians and the Iranians and the Chinese are promoting this. And what's our government answer? Well, leftist governments are coming to power. They're leftists. We're leftists. You know, what could go wrong here? You know, we're liberal. We're, you know, it's like, are you nuts? These are anti-American leftists, right?
Well, what are they going to do? What are they going to do, James, when,
don't care.
When there's another 9/11? I mean, because you can't have another. Yeah, exactly. What are they going to have? Like another commission, an investigation? Everybody's going to act like, oh, you know, I didn't know this was going to happen. Do you see this as also like plausible deniability? They can just rely on that if they don't pay attention to it, if they act like it doesn't exist, if they wipe their hands clean of it, they could just act like they did on September 11th. Like we had no idea this was going to happen.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And the reason is we know that's true because we've already seen that playbook. We saw it in Afghanistan. Who would have known things could go wrong? We saw it in failing to deter Putin in Ukraine. Who would have known it was a result of a war? Right. We saw it with inflation. Right. Oh, we passed these bills. Who would have known they would have created hyperinflation? You know, green energy. Oh, who would know we have rolling blackouts? I mean, they always have an excuse, and the excuse is to blame somebody else, or this was completely unpredictable, or nobody could deal with this. I mean, they attacked Trump because they said he couldn't deal with COVID, yet they had many, many more COVID deaths than Trump. They did much more damage to the economy. And their answer was, oh, well, you know, COVID's really tough. You know, who knew?
Yeah. So, yeah. And it wasn't our fault. It's the other guy's fault, which is what they continually do. But this is what scares me, James, and you're an expert on defense. And I always go to you and I always read your columns and try to read all the emails you send out when you're focused on different topics and issues, especially at Heritage. But we have an adversary that is intent on becoming a global leader and knocking the United States down knocking us out of our position of power in the world stage. And they're literally surrounding us now. Literally, I think they're prepping the battlefield. We've got, you know, technology of theirs in our cellular towers. I'm talking about the Chinese from Huawei right. Communications around our about 150 in the area where I was at in Montana. 150 ICBM nuclear silos out there around right. our nukes. We've got them involved in Mexico in laundering for mm-hmm. the cartels and poisoning our yep. children. I mean, yep. look at what they're doing across the board globally. And I'm just talking about China. I'm not even talking about Iran and the terrorists and all the other bad guys that are using that border. Are they prepping the battlefield? I mean, what are we waiting for in order to protect ourselves and to basically mitigate this?
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that. So I was with some foreign officials the other day, and literally I was getting the finger wavering lecture, like, what is wrong with you Americans? You're arguing with each other over these woke issues and gender and calling each other fascist and everything else. You go, we're trying to deal with China here. This is a global threat on the scale we haven't seen since the Soviet Union, the Cold War. And you Americans are busy arguing with each other. So, and these are our friends that see this, exactly what you're seeing. If you want my cold assessment on this administration on China, is when they came into office, their instincts were relatively good. In a sense, it was one of the few areas where they just didn't reflexively take all the Trump stuff and throw it overboard because they knew people took the China threat seriously. But the longer Biden is in office, the softer he has become on China. I mean, right. You would think it'd be exactly as even as people like, you know, you and me and experts and everybody else is saying, you know, the China stuff is blinking red. Biden has actually become softer and weaker on it. And we could see this in issue after issue. So, you know, we see it in things that are right in front of our face, let alone these kind of more nefarious things like Chinese money laundering. We have an administration, and again, it's not a partisan comment because you know me, I'm not even, right. I'm not partisan. I don't even belong to a political party.
Right.
This is an administration that is incapable and unwilling to deal with the China threat. I think Taiwan's a good example where, look, we actually look feckless and ridiculous, and the Chinese just really kind of ridiculed us and made fun of us. But at the end of the day, you know, Biden had to say, well, you know, oh, of course, we're just not going to let the Chinese walk and take over Taiwan. That is every spotlight in the world turned on the president with his speaker from his party in Taiwan. But when you're not in the glare of the absolute headlights, like, you know, look, the administration would have walked away and abandoned Ukraine. They didn't care about Ukraine. But when the spotlight came on, you know, Biden couldn't look like an absolute coward and weakling. But right. their goal is to turn the spotlight off, right? To turn the camera the other way. Because where nobody is looking, they're happy to do nothing. And that's why the border stuff is such a disaster. As long as they can keep people from looking at, focusing on it, as long as there's no forcing function, they're not going to do anything. If there was a 9/11 tomorrow, Joe Biden would secure the border.
Right. And it would be a day late and a dollar short. And it would be exactly. probably far yeah. worse than the September 11th attacks, because you and I both know, and I hope everyone who's listening out there understands this, that there are organizations and nations that funnel money to these organizations like Al-Qaeda, like other terrorist organizations that are desperate to see a large scale attack inside the United States. And I've got to tell you, James, that, you know, going to the border, going, and I agree with you. I think we've abandoned our allies and our in Latin America, and our, I think the Western Hemisphere should be far more important in our lexicon, right. especially I travel there. I just spoke with the president of Guatemala, and he was passionate. I spoke to him for over an hour about, you know, he is unable to have a relationship with this administration. And, you know, they constantly feel like they're being strong-armed by the State Department. And of course, I think they have their own issues too, but I think that we're only doing more damage to ourselves and our country. How do the American people, I mean, deal with this? And this is a really important question to me too. And maybe you can buttress right off of how do we deal with this when our government refuses to pay attention to it? But also, when the cartels have amassed hundreds of billions of dollars, they're laundering money. I've got to believe that people on our side of the border are on the take too, and that they're just turning their heads.
The one thing I always object to is people say Mexico is a failed state. And I said, on contrary, Mexico is not a failed state. Mexico is running exactly the way the Mexican government wants it to. People are complicit and are profiting from this. And even if they're not directly profiting, the reality, look, we don't have to do anything because the cartels are doing, the cartels are policing the streets, they're paying people off, they're giving people jobs, you know. So it's, you bring up another serious issue, and again, I'm not being conspiratorial, but when there's this much money floating around, and as a method of operation, both the cartels and the Chinese penetrate organizations, spend money to pedophile influence, bribe, corrupt people, you really have to ask the question is, what connections do people have to the cartels, to the Chinese government, right? And how are they benefiting from that? We have not yet had an accounting of all the Biden officials. You know, we all focus on Hunter Biden. He's a bright, shiny object. I get that. But how many Biden officials are connected to Chinese money? How many Democratic members of Congress are connected to Chinese money? How many universities, how many businesses, how many companies, how many corporations, how much of this is being pushed around by Chinese money? I'll give you an analogy, which people recognize now, but we ignored a couple of years ago. Russia, for years, was spending money to fund political parties and environmental groups that were protesting against energy projects that competed with Russia. Right.
Right.
So they were undermining European energy independence. And people knew this was happening. Right. So people said, well, you know, I'm the Greta Thunberg of Italy. Right. And I'm, you know, fighting for a better environment. And no, I'm just getting paid by the Russians to do the Russians' dirty work for them. So there's a lot of dirty money floating around the world and it's doing a lot of destructive things. And, you know, and the sad thing is in the democracy, in the American system, the people that are supposed to be protecting us from that are the government. And the very symbol of the loss of democracy and corruption and the undermining of the rule of law is when the people who are supposed to be stopping this are the ones who are engaging in it and profiting from it.
I think that's why Americans are so frustrated, don't you? I think they just see it now. They see it now. It's not about Trump. I think everywhere I go and someone walks up to me, I keep telling the left, don't worry about Trump. This has nothing to do with Trump. This has to do with you, right. Because the American people can see through it.
You know, thank you for having me on the show. It's been really great. And it, to me, you know, I'll just kind of end with kind of the good news, bad news stories.
Right.
The remarkable, wonderful thing about this country is so many Americans see exactly what you said, that despite their government telling us there's nothing to see here, the media cutting for them, the pundits and everything else, they know things aren't right. Immigration's a big issue for Americans, inflation, crime, all these things. They know it's wrong and they want something different. That is, to me, is remarkable. And they're not going to stand for what's going on here. So we're halfway to the goal line. And the other thing I'll say just in ending is,
well, and advice, James, advice. Do they go, they vote, right? Well, they get out there and vote.
Well, yeah, of course. But look, we know these problems are solvable because, you know, like him or not, Trump secured the border. Trump beat back the cartels.
Right.
Trump put the Chinese in their place. America can do this because we just did it a couple of years ago. So we can get back in the game. But not to overplay the metaphors, not with the coach, not with the team that we have now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, James, for being a part of the Sarah Carter Show. You're great, and I hope you come back again.
Thank you, my friend.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention Queen Elizabeth II, obviously, across the pond, you know, in England, and her amazing life and the passing of Queen Elizabeth. But I thought that this statement that she made just, you know, and I'm guessing it's maybe in the 1950s. I don't have all the information on this. It's the video has been all over Twitter and it's, you know, been on the internet and, but it reflects everything I think that we should try to aspire to, especially in this day and age. It's timeless. It is a timeless statement. And I always talk about living by principle on this show, especially in the United States. We have to live by principle. That is what our nation, the principles that our nation was founded on. And that's what makes us who we are. Once we lose that, I feel like we lose so much that we could lose everything. And this September 11th, I think it's about remembering those sacrifices and remembering what each and every one of us needs to do, could do, has to do in an effort to save our country, our families, our communities, and our lives. And I hope that this statement by Queen Elizabeth, a young queen at this time, touches your heart the way it touched mine.
But it's not the new inventions which are the difficulty. The trouble is caused by unthinking people who carelessly throw away ageless ideals as if they were old and outworn machinery. They would have religion thrown aside, morality in personal and public life made meaningless, honesty counted as foolishness, and self-interest set up in place of self-restraint. At this critical moment in our history, we will certainly lose the trust and respect of the world if we just abandon those fundamental principles which guided the men and women who built the greatness of this country and Commonwealth. Today, we need a special kind of courage. Not the kind needed in battle, but a kind which makes us stand up for everything that we know is right, everything that is true and honest. We need the kind of courage that can withstand the subtle corruption of the cynics, so that we can show the world that we are not afraid of the future. It has always been easy to hate and destroy. To build and to cherish is much more difficult.
Thank you, everyone, for joining the Sarah Carter Show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter at Sarah Carter DC, on Instagram at S Carter DC. And by the way, go to my website, sarahacarter.com, for all the latest stories. And you can get all the links there as well to download the podcast. God bless you. God bless our great nation. God bless the Queen of England. May she rest in peace. And God bless the great state of Texas. Today, I'm joined by Rebecca Weber, the CEO of the Association for Mature American Citizens. It's also known as AMAC. Can you share a little bit with the audience about your father, Dan Weber, and how he founded AMAC and why?
My father formed AMAC after he recognized that the AARP really was not representing his values. And those values were really faith, family, and freedom. And my father believed in America's greatness. He believed that there was what he described as a cultural shift occurring in our country. He thought that the very, very foundation, the Constitution, was being disregarded. And we saw that the power of government was growing and individual freedoms were diminishing, were being threatened. And to get more specific was in 2006 when he said to me that he was canceling his AARP membership. And I said to my father, why would you do that? And he said, well, they've just named Harry Belafonte Man of the Year. And he went on to say that Harry Belafonte had commented to Hugo Chavez saying that George W. Bush was the greatest terrorist threat in America. And my father said something is wrong with that. So he saw the AARP make this sharp left turn. And that was when he said, let's form AMAC. And I said, let's do it.
Rebecca, thanks so much for being with me today. I'm honored to have you and AMAC as a sponsor for the Sarah Carter Show. You know, for more information, folks, visit amac.us/Carter.
Hey guys, we know it's hard to keep up with all the news these days, but don't worry because we're here to talk and laugh about it all. Biden is dividing the country by calling Republicans the biggest threat to our nation. Big tech is being exposed for working with the government, and voting is more important than ever with elections approaching. Hey, it's the Chicks here from the Chicks on the Right podcast. Download and subscribe to our daily podcast to hear us pick apart and pick on the news of the day. Politics to pop culture, nobody's safe, but it's all fun. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.